football on off the ball.
Cleared football ultra under Mourinho during the classical wars when it was Mourinho versus Guardiola. There were few, if any, players who were more belligerent, more committed to the Mourinho cause than Arbeloa.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
All right, Daro Kaneja, come to talk to.
Tamana Vaharfad, Gramagat.
I'd say so. What a weekend.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable, really. Coming home with silverware, back to West Kerry, the first of two, hopefully, and Ballymac coming to home with theirs as well. So hopefully that was the first of three. We finally got the result we wanted in Croke Park. Famously, I suppose, we were there before at the senior level. Caltra beat us, and this time out, you know, just to see the joy in people's faces Sunday evening, Sunday night, right into today, like, you know, it's just coming from, you know, the smiles are coming from a place of deep, deep satisfaction, really. You know, I suppose all the cliches you hear about the club are kind of realised there and then, right in front of you, and have been for the last couple of days. It's been some party.
We're very clear in the build-up just how difficult the loss in the noughties was to deal with. Does this, did it add to the pressure that you felt as somebody who was involved in the backroom team, and just the, like, everything becomes so heightened when you know what the possible repercussions
is. Yeah. We had seen the other side of it. I suppose there was probably a bit too much talk about that, because obviously there's an entire generation gone by, the generation that lost the senior club final in 04. A lot of them were on the sideline the last day. In management, Fergal O'Shea, Cunlo Crowley, Don McGarrett and myself were involved in that game. And, you know, we didn't want to burden the younger lads with that. And to be honest with you, I don't think, you know, they thought that much about it. You know, they were kids back then, some of them, and some of them weren't even born. We have about 10, 18, 19-year-old lads on our squad, like, so I don't think it was a big deal. You know, I was even trying to explain to one of our midfielders the night before the game, you know, what type of a player he'd be marking. I kind of referenced Sean Cavanagh. He's kind of a Sean Cavanagh kind of a player. Comes off to, and he was looking at me going, who's Sean Cavanagh? You know, so it kind of hits you then, okay, they're not really thinking that way.
What's the difference there in observing an amazing victory like that at the weekend versus being involved in it on the pitch?
I think it was Paddy O'Shea said it when he won his first as a manager in 1997, you know, winning one of the players, winning an All-Ireland as a player is probably a great, great feeling. And when you're a couple of stone overweight and X amount of years, when I'm 50 years of age, it isn't too bad on the sideline either. The game has just changed so much. I mean, I've never seen as much time put in terms of preparation, you know, and even the way the game has gone so compressed now, we won a semi-final after extra time down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and then you're just flipping it around. You've 8 days to recover injuries, and the amount of resources and effort put into getting the lads right, getting them to, you know, to 3 o'clock and on Sunday the following day or the following weekend, it was huge. Like, it was a huge, huge pressure to get them there. So it was almost like a relief to reach Sunday morning to say, listen, we've done as much as we can here. It's over to the lads now. Like, you know, it's a very compressed season. It's very hard to kind of get lads prepared and, you know, get them right and to recover from injuries and stuff like that. But we knew the terms and conditions before we went into it, like, and thankfully we've come out the right side of it now.
There's not a monopoly on just one emotion, but was relief the same one you felt Sunday night?
It wasn't so much relief. I think, Air, you know, in the game itself was a really bad game of football.
Yeah, and it wasn't
We were one of two participants in that really bad game of football, so we have to take the blame for that, you know, but it was kind of needs must. Like, we approached it the way, you know, we would have done a lot of homework on Glenullen. We figured it, you know, not to run down the middle and to go side to side and stretch them around the place and be patient and wait for the gaps and go explode into those gaps then, and that was the thing. Like, so, but at halftime, we were 8 points up. So, you know, it wasn't so much relief at the final whistle or Sunday night either. It was just pure elation for and delight for lads that, you know, it's your classic club cliche, you know, the old stalwarts meeting you back at the train station, tears in their eyes, grown men and women, tears in their eyes. It's very personal. It's totally different emotion to winning with Kerry, you know. It's a totally, totally different emotion. You know everybody, you know their kids, you know their moms and dads, you know that's it. It's just so personal. And to see those people, see people who you've never seen express that kind of emotion,
yeah,
you know, that in itself is very, very emotional. Like, and you know, it was just a wonderful, wonderful night above in Dublin on Sunday night, and travelling all the way down by train and by bus back west, like, and into the night, bonfires lighting on hills, flares going in places there were never flares ever lit. And, you know, just having been part of that that journey is special, and I think it'll stay with the lads for a long, long time.
Mm. Were you part of the festivities on Monday morning in the Boar's Head?
Do you know what? I'm the chairman of the club and somebody has to be switched on. I was, yeah, the lads were saying we're off to the Boar's Head, and I said, we leave Hugh alone now for a while, because all the lads went down, and yeah, they had their party piece and the music and the crack started there. But yeah, there was buses to be loaded and stuff to be organised with the hotel and everything like that. So it's something I didn't notice when I was playing myself, who's doing these things and who. But unfortunately, some of that falls on somebody that has to kind of stay some way sane and stuff like that, you know. So once we got home, I was able to, yeah, that's when the relief came in then. We brought these lads home, they're home safe and so on. They can look after themselves now. And it was great, I think. And it was a nice symmetry to it as well. I think this Paddy O'Shea kind of created that tradition himself, yeah. Of the Monday morning club in the Boar's Head. And it was nice for Paddy, his son, to go down there and to bring all the lads with him, like, you know. And I saw the clips and the videos, and we picked him up in the bus station, or the bus stop across the way, across the river, on the way to Houston Station, like. And you could see the lads were after having a good few hours inside the Boar's Head at that stage. Yeah.
Can I ask you a little bit about what the off season was like, and when everybody started to realise just how good the squad was at the moment? Because I think one of the pieces I read, Aidan Walsh came in and was like, geez, you guys are great. Yeah, I'm not sure you fully appreciate what the potential you have is. And I was reading as well last week that it was a long out process for you to make sure that the manager was going to come back. Was it you 40 days of constant, it was like Jesus in the desert?
Yeah, Fergal O'Shea is the manager, and he's got something, you know, that the players, I think they're afraid of him. Old style fear. And, you know, he drills the lads. He's a school principal. He would have coached, he would have taught a lot of the young lads as kids, like, and they still have that kind of respect for him. And, you know, Fergal, in a way, I think by his own admission, had even fallen out of love with the game for years and years. It took a lot to get him back. I think he actually cracked eventually when I showed him one of the parents out in the school yard, and he a parent who had been living in the UAE for a number of years, and had come back with his family, and said, see that fellow out there, I said, he's never seen us beat Dingle, he's never seen us, you know. And he's a former teammate of ours, and I think he kind of relented at that stage. He said, I better just jump in here, like, you know. But yeah, and then it took, as Fergal himself explained after the game, it took a Corkman, an outsider, to come in to say to us. And we had a meeting with Aidan Walsh and with all the players at the end of the county league, start of the championship, just to kind of review progress so far, and, you know, what their ambitions for our group were, and how we were going to approach the championship. And Aidan just came out with it, like, and it just, we were there, four or five of us, you know, it was like an interview thing. Like, he was sitting across from us, and there was four or five of us there, and we kind of going, he said, like, I don't think you realise how good these young lads are, you know. And Aidan was kind of blown away, because we would have been talking to him from the start of the year in January. He was coming, we play our football in Galeras, which is probably the windiest pitch in Ireland. It's right on the sea. And I remember after 1 month's training, Aidan saying to me, does it ever not be windy here? the cones were getting blown away, and every bit of gear was getting blown away every single training session. He said, I seem to be running against the wind all the time, like, it just changes. And I said, look, that's us, that's where we are, that's what we are. And I was kind of inside my own head saying, Jesus, this fella regretting his decision already to go, you know, because it was a huge wrench for him to leave Kanturk. He's very, very embedded in Kanturk. GAA would have explained to him over a year ago, Aidan, there's no pressure, there's absolutely no, we didn't want to be having a situation where there was kind of a bit of Achran, I don't know what the English for it is, you know, about him leaving his club, because he loves Kanturk. His father's involved, his brother's involved, all his family and cousins are involved, and that he would be coming over here. But I think he had made up his mind over the Christmas period in 2024. Yeah, this is it. I'm going to have my young fella see me play in the Gaelta jersey, which is probably where I'll be and he'll be for the foreseeable future. Yeah. And we're very glad that he did. But it was halfway through the year. And again, it probably sometimes does take an outsider to kind of hold up a mirror to a club and say, lads, you're totally underachieving here. You don't, you know, there's talent here that should be actually achieving more. And it struck us like a slap in the face at the time. And we took it from there, and we kind of used it a few times into the year, asking more of the lads all the time.
That Fergal O'Shea relentless pursuit of his return was, I begged him, or his retention, I suppose, I begged him for about 40 or 50 days in a row, is the direct quote. That's not an exaggeration, is it? Those number of days.
He had come in, that would have been a couple of years ago when he came in as a selector. I just begged him to come back on board in some way. We had a great guy for 3 years, Michal O'Shea, who kind of bailed us out, because we'd have a very strict policy in the club of not having outside managers. And it was a huge, you know, a huge leap of faith with us. Michal's mom is from the Gaeltacht. His father would have designed our pitch in Galarus. But Michal is a Castle Gregory club man, won an All-Ireland junior with Castle Gregory, won an All-Ireland senior with Vincent's, and he did a 3 year stint with us, you know, at a time of huge transition in the club, and it was a big thing for him to come in. And one of the conversations I would have had with Michal is, Michal, this is a huge leap for us because we don't do outsiders and we don't pay outside managers, and you have to speak Irish. And he said, that's exactly what I want to do, and I don't want a bob for it, and I don't want anything else. So it's just he said, I've been coaching these lads at development level with Kerry. Michal was a Kerry minor selector. He said, I want to get involved with this group. And he took that bridge over, and in his third year, that's where the unrelenting 40 days or whatever of pressure on Fergal Shea came. I dropped my kids at school every morning at 9 o'clock, and I see Fergal every day. So every day I'd be kind of looking at him saying, are you coming on board? I knew what was going on in his head. You know, I knew that he had fallen out of love with the game. He wasn't going to games. He wasn't watching games. But, you know, he has young kids now coming through as well. And I'm just saying, look, bring the kids along. It'd be good for them. You know, we're training at 7 o'clock in the evening. Bring them along. They can collect balls. They can, you know, it's your classic. You know, it happens all over the country. And you're kind of leaving at 7 o'clock in the evening. You're saying, you know, okay, the kids are doing homework. And, you know, his eldest lad, Neil, is under 16 now. He's one of our good, we have a good under 16 team coming through. Like, and he was there for a lot of those early training sessions, collecting balls quietly, doing his thing. Like, and, you know, I think it's a nice story. And I hope at this stage that Fergal is enjoying it. I think he was very much halfway through the year. I think there was a moment halfway through. He took over as actual manager at the start of this year after being a selector for 2 years. And I think, you know, the penny dropped with him. You know, said, this is actually, I think he fell back in love with the game basically again. I think he got his hunger for it back, because Fergal is very much 100% fella. He does not do things in half measures. Yeah. He's up early in the morning. He's up and down a place called Crookbourne. He chats to himself going up the hill and down the hill, and he times himself going up the hill. Fergal was a fantastic footballer, like, and he still has that drive in him, like, you know, and he gets us, he understands us, he's pure Gaeltacht, like, and he knows most of the lads. So it was an honour to work with him as manager this year, and I think all the selectors would say the same thing.
One of the favourite pieces that I read before the build up to the All-Ireland football final, the senior football final, was your piece about Breathan O'Buglie and just how important he was to the Kerry team, and how kind of underappreciated he might have been in advance of that game, and certainly I think afterwards many people had woken up to him. But it was only after reading Pádraig O'Shea talking about his brother that I realised that Rory is also a brilliant footballer who's had two cruciates. For him to have his moment to shine in an All-Ireland final like this as well is kind of one of those incredible full circle stories.
Yeah, Rory was a former under-21 Munster player of the year, did two cruciates, or did the same cruciate twice. The second day, I remember I was standing next to him and we were playing Castle Gregory. He caught, on his comeback, he caught the first ball, no reflection on the corner back, basically tried to turn the corner back, left a roar of pain. I just looked at Brian and I said, that's a crucial kind of game, isn't it? And he was out for another year. You know, at the key stage, Rory was heading for Kerry Senior at that stage, you know. So to get him back to where he was the last day even, it was a huge effort on his part. And I'd say a lot of self-doubting on that road as well, because there was a lot of setbacks. And he was a fella that all throughout this year that you'd have to rest every now and then, like, because, you know, the leg isn't and wasn't anywhere as strong as it would be. But he kind of got a bit of a chink of light, I'd say, over a year ago, I think, where he was kind of put on some kind of an extended panel with Kerry to say, listen, we haven't forgotten you. You do this, you follow this programme, you will make progress. And he's slowly but steadily getting back to where he was.
Can I ask about your own role, Dara? Do you derive love from the duties of chairman, or is it that you would do anything for An Gaeltacht?
I don't understand how anybody would want to be chairman of a club or would want to be chairman of a county board or anything like that. I really don't. It doesn't appeal to me, high up or low down. I was actually talking to the lads on the way down the train. They were talking about the work that goes into being chairman. I said, look, I actually don't know why. It's not nothing to do with. I said there must be some small bit of an ego somewhere in me or something, or there must be something that likes the authority. I don't like it. I don't like doing it. What I love doing is just helping, sorting out issues and sorting out stuff for the club. And I suppose that's because, like Liam O'Rohan and my own dad was involved for years, and that you just want to give. We got so much out of the game, so much. Like, we could never, ever pay the club back. They gave us everything. And, going to Galler's, because we wouldn't have had much, the club has been very, very good to us, and it's not about being a chairman or anything like that. I actually don't understand, because playing is everything. Playing the game is what you want to do. Playing, unfortunately can't play the game anymore. I'd have loved to have played until I was about 40, but I had to finish at 33 because I was crippled with back injuries and stuff like that. But just to see all those lads, who were chairmen and secretaries and treasurers and PROs when we were going, just getting that satisfaction out of it. So, the admin side of it, I don't like it all. I have no interest in it. And I wouldn't say I'd even be a good chairman in terms of chairing meetings or, doing any of that stuff. I don't like AGMs. I don't like monthly meetings, but I like, I suppose, helping out the club, helping out the young lads develop, and it's very important for me that they get the why, that they get not just we won 12-6 or whatever, but why, that winning in All Ireland is just the start of a process, really. It's what's kind of revealed in the process. Beyond that, I think, is what's important to me, that they'd find that the penny would drop to them and say, see that thing in our jersey there, Sprid, Cree, Cod, Tonga. What does Sprid mean? What does Cree mean? What does Cod mean? What does Tonga mean? That they get all that. And that's what's most important to me. I have no interest whatsoever in the administration side of it.
Do the rest at Anguelltecht know that?
Well, we never had a kind of a summit meeting to explain it, but you just go from crisis to crisis, really. I'd say they do. I'd say, they know that, my day job involves, I'm regional manager right on the Gaeltacht and Munster, and the whole word Gaeltacht means so much to me. I remember leading into the 2004 All-Ireland club final and All-Ireland senior final when I was captain of Kerry, when I was in the lead up to this game, the texts were coming from Guidoir, Clare off the coast of Cork, on Ryan in Waterford. I don't know if the young lads, and I hope the penny will drop with them someday, that Gaeltacht identity goes beyond, geography, goes beyond football. It's a very, very powerful thing. I mean, I'm talking to you this morning, one of the greats, Sean O'Shea, Parker Bullitt, the singer of Sean O'Malone's song, he passed away yesterday, a couple of days short of his 90th birthday. He was a good friend of ours in the Gaeltacht, a good friend of mine. There were people down in Cooley and Cork, Padre O'Rea, that would have been his, almost a soulmate. He was a father figure to Padder, and he would have expressed that identity very, very well in terms of music and song. And playing football and wearing the jersey is just one small part of that. And that's where I'd be coming from in that regard, that the Gaeltacht identity is, our backs are to the wall in terms of our identity, in terms of our language is under pressure, and the fight back is coming from, deep inside in the belly of a lot of people. There's a great Gaeltacht story. One of the great Gaeltacht stories the last 12 months, for example, there was a pub, the Eanie Tavern, the house that Jack O'Connor built, actually, the house that Jack built, the pub that he built when he came home from America. He sold it on, and it was being sold on by the next owners there recently, and they couldn't find somebody to keep the pub open. It's probably the hub around which the community was built down there in Drummond in South Kerry and Killinea. And they organised a GoFundMe, and they raised the money to buy the pub. The community did, community council, kept it open. We were down there the week before Christmas, and just to see the joy in their faces to say, yeah, this is happening. We're not necessarily getting all this help from, from the authorities, but we're keeping our only public house in the whole parish open. because we believe in it so much, because they believe in the community so much. That it's not just a Gaelta thing, but other communities can say the same thing. But that's inspiring. That those kind of stuff inspired us in the Gaelta as well. I live in a parish where there's one public house, two post offices have closed, two shops have closed, two great award-winning restaurants have closed in the last 7 or 8 years. We don't have much else, like, and it's not Bealbucht, it's not poor mouth stuff, like, it's just, it's a consequence of rural depopulation. It's happening left, right and centre in Kerry, and that's why I think it's a great story. I mean, there's a lot of talk this week about the structures in Kerry favouring Kerry teams when they go into the club championship. It does. We've got our house in order in that regard. Like, yeah. But, and I don't make any apologies for it, but I don't. There's not too many counties up the other side of the country, like, you know, facing the same demographic challenges as we are. There was a great report came out there before the Kerry GAA convention, a very comprehensive report about what's happening in primary schools in South Kerry, North Kerry. There are places in East Kerry then and Mid Kerry that are growing hugely, and there's a huge challenge there for promotion of GAA. But where we are, if you go any further, you're off the edge of a cliff. There's nothing else. You know, we're as far back as you can go in County Kerry. Anybody that's been to Dingle thinks they've arrived. We go further back again, and you know that's where we are. And that kind of mindset is there. Like, you know, and you know, we were just delighted to express that in the last couple of weeks, to be able to say, like, this is what's happening here. We might be under pressure in many ways, like, but this is what we have. And, you know, to see, we brought Cormac Begley along from our county final time. Cormac's a neighbour of mine down the road. He's an amazing musician. He's worked with Brian Eno, he's worked with, you know, U2, he's worked with all the top musicians, but comes from that wellspring of traditional music, where, you know, and we're just so proud of him. And he became a kind of a totem musician for us this year. And his one of the lads' favourite track is a track called To War, Con Cogig, Con Caha. So just, we're going fighting. I mean, I feel pat saying with all the war stuff that's going on in the world at the moment. But for us, it was just kind of, you know, going out there. It was the last tune we'd hear before we'd go into a dressing room, and then we'd have Cormac in afterwards, like, you know, with his piece To War. It just drives the lads bananas. It's like a kind of a haka for us, like, you know, and it's something we're, again, that just connects us to that wellspring from which Cormac comes. Like,
this whole year feels like there's a book in it.
I'm sure it'll have to be written as Gaeilge if there is, and nobody half the country won't understand that. Like, but you know, you can't really get us speaking English a lot of the time. We're thinking in Irish and translating into English constantly. But yeah, there's a story there. There's a great, you know, the Corkman that came in, the manager that came back, the musician that jumped on board, the young lads that, you know, that had their eyes open for them. You know, and it's all there. It's something that we'll remember, I think, for the rest of our lives.
Cree, Changa, Spirid. What was the fourth one?
Spirid, Cree, Caid, Tanga. Yeah, and Caid then would be, you know, we're people, just to shorten our name for scoreboard, we're called an Gaeltacht, but our proper name is Cumann Caid an Gaeltacht, and the history of Caid in Kerry is huge. There was a, you know, there's a lot of archive stuff in Radio Gaeltacht as well, you know, about the history of Caid Mhór before the formation of the GAA in 1884. Caid Mhór, the finest exponents of Caid Mhór, of Caid, were in West Kerry, and the stuff of lore and legend. And it's something we're very proud of as well, like, you know, that it just ties us back to all that stuff, like, you know, that that we're able to, you know, connect, you know, I don't know how many All-Ireland medals we have in the club. I think Brian's latest one and Carla Begley's latest one became 52 or 3, I'm not sure which, but they know that there were so many people came before them. Like, they know that, you know, we've Joe Kivon, 1942 Dublin All Ireland winning captain, Joe Fitzgerald. He would have captain. He has an All Ireland medal. He would have been a granduncle of Aidan McCarles, and it would have won an All Ireland with Dublin. Finished at 5 o'clock in the evening. Croke Park, was working at 6 o'clock in the evening on O'Connell Bridge as a guard an hour later. You know, all that little stories feed into the lore of our club. And that's only since 1884. You know, there's hundreds of years before that of Caid Mhór. And Liam O'Rohan, who would have coached us all up along, coached Louise Neave-Whittertig, you know, the great Kerry ladies player, he would have always drilled it into them in their school. Caid is God. There's nothing else around here. Caid is God, you know, and that is kind of a mana, a motto as well down our way. Caid is God.
The ability to tell these stories and the importance of the actual victory this week, like, you know, I'd like to think that we'd still be able to have a conversation today if you hadn't won the game at the weekend. But we should probably frame this for people who are just watching this and coming to the story. Is it 200 adult members that the club has?
I think it was 181 at last count. We'd have to ask the club register now how much we have after the AGM. Yeah, we're just about keeping our head above water, kind of at, you know, in terms of keep getting 15 out to field. Just like our neighbours, Dingle. Dingle approached us about 10 years ago. They were struggling with a particular age group and they couldn't field the team. They were looking for an amalgamation. And it became kind of rancorous because we actually get there. Some of them are our best friends. We go to school together and everything, but they were struggling. And I remember, you know, I would have been a prime driver in the move, you know, not to accept them. And it was very hurtful for them, I'm sure. Like, you know, they would have, they tried to, they were looking for help. And, you know, we said, no, we're okay at the moment because we didn't, the numbers. And you had to explain to them, look, this isn't an anti-Dingle thing, it's a pro-Gaelta thing, because I didn't want our corner forward losing his place in the team, that we'd have a great amalgamated team. We'd win county championships at under 14 level, but it would be worthless, like, because we'd be losing players, you know, we'd be losing. So it became a source of tension for a while. Like, you know, this is, it was never anything personal against Dingle. Like, it was just more a pro-Gaelta move. It was protectionism as much as anything else, you know. But I'm just so delighted that they are thriving now as well, you know, and they're at a position where they're still struggling for numbers like ourselves, but they're able to produce two or three players every year and add that to the core group that they have. And they have some team at the moment, they have some work, I think, in that team. And where they are at the moment is something that we'd aspire to. It's kind of strange to say that. We're after winning an Intermediate All-Ireland, they're going for a Senior All-Ireland next Sunday, and it's something that, you know, that we'd like to see happening at some stage down the road with ourselves. Like, you know, they've thrown everything bar the kitchen sink at this year, like, and we're hoping that they get over next Sunday in Bridges, because again, they'll have a great story to tell if they do.
Yeah, and like, listening to you this morning, Dara, you'd want to become part of this community, you'd be envious that you're not, but the last count is 181 adult members, and with the big issue of rural depopulation, like, I wonder what can actually incentivise people to stay.
I thought it happened during COVID. I thought there was something going to happen during COVID, you know, this work from home, because there's a lot of very talented people, you know, living in towns that aren't that far away, in Tralee, in Cork, in Dublin, Limerick, places like that. And, you know, apart from probably commute reasons, that there's probably no great reason not to want to live here, but you have to wake up in the morning in the November on a dreary November day and look up in Mount Brandon and say, you know, that you still love the place, and it's probably too much for people. You know, it's a very, you know, austere place in November. We can romanticise it all we want, like, you know, but, you know, you need an income. You need a proper job. There's a talent drain that going on. There are a lot of rural areas all over the country. Unfortunately, we can't live rurally. Some of it is tied into planning issues. Cormac Begley's father, Brandon Begley, famously fought a 12-year battle to build a single house with the authorities. Won his battle eventually, and again inspired us to say, listen, you don't have to accept stuff lying down. You can fight the authorities, and you can eventually win these battles. And there's a whole movement grown out of that. It's called Bonu. Which means kind of nearly desolation or born away. I don't know what the translation for it is in English, like, but it's to do with what's going on with the planning authorities at the moment. They're just, you know, not helping, and they're very reasonably on their own part arguing that, look, we allow X amount of percentage every year of rural planning, but there is a huge drift away from giving planning permissions to rural dwellings. They don't get people's attachment to place. I don't think they factor that in. You know, they don't seem to, you know, get that. And Brandon, Cormac's father, fought that battle a number of years ago and won it in the High Court. And it was a very important moment for us as well to say, yeah, you know, this is a guy that just wanted to put roots down where he was born and reared, where his family were born and reared, and he had to explain to authorities that this is primal, like, this goes deep, this is important, this is like the Bull McCabe in his field, you know. And I think they get it now, the precedent is there, but still, I don't see too many rural couples saying, listen, we're going to live here for the rest of our lives, we're going to raise our kids here, we're going to put them to the primary school, we're going to get those public houses and restaurants and post offices opened again. It's not happening. The trend is the other way.
That's why that work the GA did on the rural depopulation and bringing it forward as a conversation topic is really important. I just wonder, I hope that there's an opportunity for us to continue to have that conversation, but in a way that is, like, actually leading to solutions and demanding of the political classes that they address the issues and begin to do something about it.
Yeah, it's happened. There's a task force down in South Kerry for a number of years, and they're gradually, in small ways, having little victories, you know, but not enough, not fast enough to sustain a team, a single team, let's say. They're all amalgamating down in South Kerry, the teams, all the clubs. If you go and if you look at the South Kerry Minor Championship, South Kerry Under-16 Championship, now there are four teams, five team combinations, amalgamation teams. Where's the identity there that used to be there? Valinch Island, home to the greatest footballer that ever lived, Mick O'Connell. You know, they're not able to field teams. You know, Declan Sullivan's team, Drummond Pierce's, you know, are struggling for numbers. They're all down, and South Kerry is a kind of a precursor to what's happening in North Kerry and parts of West Kerry. And then there are other places of huge growth in Kerry, and that need help catering for the influx of population. You know, it's a very complex thing, and it's not going to be solved over, you know, a conversation but it would, you know. The starting point would be if they understood that attachment to place, like that's there, and that's good, that's, you know, and if people that, you know, have that choice, that you know, say, listen, I want to live in the big town. You know, I mean, I can see it in 10 years, all the planning permissions in this area are going to be allowed, are going to be, you know, veering towards town and urban dwelling again, like, you know, which I get, it's issues like water, sewer, everything like that, but we should be able to help people live in their communities, or else, you know, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be bonu, there's going to be desolation in these rural areas, the natural consequences of it, and it'll be expressed in amalgamated underage teams, amalgamated senior teams eventually. And where's that identity going to go then? You know, you're losing an entire identity there, like, and it's you know, it's not good enough.
If it's fair to say that you were a reluctant club chairman, what I hear is a grassroots movement that you're really passionate about. Is there any interest at all in getting involved in politics where you can have a direct impact?
No, none whatsoever. You know, my professional interest lies in, you know, keeping Radio na Gaeltacht, keeping that flag flying. It means an awful lot to me. I'm 26 years and working with Radio na Gaeltacht out of college, and I loved it from the word go. I loved them, you know, what they represent, what they do, and it's hopefully what I'll be doing until I retire.
So we couldn't twist your arm to have a little sideline for...
Absolutely. I think the politicians we have are well aware of the issues and are fighting, you know, those battles in Dáil Éireann every day, you know, and that's why they get voted in.
I suppose the other side of that is actually you can tell your story, and everybody who's watched it this morning has gone away and curious and invigorated by what you've said. So there is a role for us in the media to play to help change these things.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they do have a very important, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, even the Irish language, you know, to speak the Irish language around here, it's a personal decision for anybody. It's very easy to speak the English language. It's all around us. It's the pervading language everywhere, including in the Gaeltacht. Like, that pressure is there. But it's a personal decision that you just wake up one morning and say, I'm not going to, you know, like Michael Hartnett, the poet in 1975, farewell to English. Let's live our lives through Irish here. It's idealism. It's romanticism. It's this or it's that. But there's a personal decision to be made for everybody. And, you know, I'm sure there are people living in towns in Dublin and Cork would love to be living back in the Gaeltacht, would prefer, you know, various reasons, financial or otherwise, can't or aren't in a position to do so. But I would beg them, you know, that if they could, you know, to try and, let's say, you know, live in the Gaeltacht, you know, and, you know, try and, you know, contribute something to the community. Like,
we live in, it's a magical time for Kerry football right now, and on Gaeltacht, and at the same time, there are these huge issues. How do you feel about the future?
I'd always be hopeful. You know, my mindset always would be in terms of the GAA. When Christy Ring was retiring that time, they said, oh, they'll never be his likes again. And he kind of refuted it outright. You know, it's the best hurlers are yet to come. And I see that, in, you know, the good in all the young lads that are in the Gaeltacht at the moment. You're looking at them. They're down in UCC. They're in MTU in Cork. They're up in UL and they're in UCG. And you're saying, geez, I hope they see this and that they, you know, that they get a good job and that they try and to live at home if they can in the future. Like, you know, they can travel the world for a while, like, you know, but come back. I was very fortunate when I came out of college, like, you know, that Paddy O'Shea said to me, do not be getting a job in Dublin. You're not going to play for Kerry if you get a job in Dublin. I came out of college and I started working with Micheál O'Shea and other work colleagues. Micheál, you know, was a former All-Ireland medal winner himself, like, you know, and you just see the passion they have for their, you know, for what they were doing and the belief they have in their own communities. That's a privileged position to be in, to see those people, to be educated, to be moulded by those people, like, and to say, you know, that, you know, this is where you want to spend the rest of your life in your community, like, you know. And it's a very personal decision for a lot of people, you know. You just kind of, it's not kind of say that you wake up one morning and say, oh, I want to live in West Kerry. You have to get planning, you have to get a good job that'll pay you, because, you know, you have to do those things. It has to come, you know, first off from that personal decision you made, but the cards have to fall right for you as well. So to be in a position to live in a beautiful place like West Kerry, where millions of visitors come to every year, but they go home, you know, and, you know, it's almost, you feel like it's a reservation sometimes, like, you know, that, you know, we're here all the time, and that's where the football comes in, I think. They're saying, we're here, this is us, this is what we're about. Split Creek, Hadtanga, this is what we're all about.
Incredible story. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. That was brilliant.
No hassle. Nice to chat to you, lads.
That was great, Darragh. Slán.
Slán go forward.
See ya.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.